Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
With the holidays coming up, why not give yourself or someone you love the gift of a really good night's sleep? With today's show sponsor, it's Casper. Casper created one perfect mattress and sells it directly to you. No retailer markups, no tacked-on fees, just an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. Combining springy latex and supportive memory foams to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. I've got a Casper mattress in my home, and it's so cozy, and it's so awesome. And it's an amazing technology. Arriving in a small box, you open it up, and poof, it expands into this amazing Casper mattress, providing a premium mattress experience without charging you thousands of dollars. The Casper Twin Mattress is only $500, $950 for the king. Plus, you get a 100-night in-home trial. Sleep on it. Make sure you love it. If you don't, they'll pick it up and they will refund you everything. The Casper mattress is made in America, named by Time Magazine as one of the best inventions of 2015. Free shipping to the United States and Canada. You can give the gift of comfortable, blissful sleep and get $50 toward any mattress purchase when you go to casper.com/Seth Andrews and use the promo code Seth Andrews. That's casper.com/Seth Andrews. Promo code Seth Andrews. There will be no broadcast next Tuesday as I'll be preparing for the big event in Dallas, Texas, our 300th broadcast at the DoubleTree by Hilton Dallas Richardson. The folks at Fellowship of Freethought Dallas have been kind enough to invest in an expansion after we sold out, and there are now more tickets still going fast. You can go to fofdallas.org/300live if you want to be a part of that. You know, I've been looking at the show as we get set to kick off the next round, the next 300, hopefully, broadcast. I've had several people ask if I was ever going to change the show intro. Some broadcasters will keep the same show intro forever. It's easily identifiable. Everybody knows it. It's familiar and they like it. Other people are like, please, for the love of Pete, change your intro. It's been over 6 years. Do something different. And I'm still not exactly sure what I'm going to do. I'm not sure if I'm going to keep the same show intro or if I'm just going to turn it on its ear and put a fresh coat of paint on the front door, so to speak. What do you think? You want me to keep the intro or do you think we should change it? I am genuinely curious. And yes, I will check the comment section if you want to sound off with your opinion. Some cool shows coming up a little later on. At the end of November, I'm going to finally do the show where we review Ray Comfort's new film. I'll admit to you that I found The Atheist Delusion almost unwatchable. I'm sure Ray Comfort would say it's because I had the conviction of the Holy Spirit. Jesus was talking to me and I just didn't want to listen, so I shut the film off. I'm sure that's what he would say. But the truth is, it's actually one of the most vacuous defenses of the Christian faith I have ever seen in my life. Nearly unwatchable. But a lot of podcasters and activists have decided it's just too good an opportunity to pass up, so they reviewed the film, and I'm going to add my name to that list. In fact, I'm bringing the God-Awful Movies guys onto the show late November to just talk about Ray and his new movie. That's going to be a ride. In December, we're prepping our year-in-review broadcast, going to look back on the highlights and the lowlights of 2016. We're going to do a fun show in December called What Was I Thinking? You know, the word thinking is, of course, in the brand of thethinkingatheist.com. It is an encouragement to everyone to reject faith, to engage the mind, and to be thinking, to think about what we're doing, to think about the challenges and opportunities we face, to start thinking, right? But we've all had those moments in our lives when we just weren't. We just did something stupid. We just weren't engaged in the brain. And as a result, we now have a story that we tell at parties about the time that we just vapor locked. I just had my head up my ass and I did this. I wasn't paying attention and I did this. I misunderstood or had bad information and I did this. I was drunk and I did this. Fun and funny stories that we share together is what that show is going to be about. And I know you got one. I know you have a story. And if you would like to submit it for the broadcast or even share it on the show personally, just email me podcast@thethinkingatheist.com with a synopsis of your story. And we're going to choose some of the best ones for that show. So that's coming up in December. The show tonight is the audio of a speech I've been giving around the country for the past, 7 months or so. This version of the speech was an event in Riverside, California that was sponsored by RAFT, the Riverside Atheist and Freethinkers. Jen Ramirez and the group out there, just fantastic people. They hosted me at the Arlington Library in Riverside. This is a story that's sort of been on my mind over the past several weeks, months, even years. Honestly, to a degree, it's been something that's resonated with me since I rejected Christianity, since I sort of went through my journey out of religion and realized I was an atheist and then became an atheist activist. It's a journey that I think most people are going to get. There are going to be some people who don't take the journey with me. But I think most people are going to relate in some way to the story that I'm about to tell. It is about a 45-minute speech. It, of course, does incorporate a lot of visual elements because it was a presentation in front of a live audience, and there's a video of the speech. So if you'd like to watch it so you can see all the slides, the YouTube link is in the description box of this broadcast. So you have that option. The presentation is called The Mystery Letter, and I hope you enjoy.
So I was at home, this is late March of this year, and there's an envelope that arrived in the mail, this nondescript brown, big brown envelope, and I open it up, and inside that envelope is another envelope, and it looks like this. In fact, this is the exact envelope. Now, this was addressed to me, but there was no return address. It was dated, post-dated, the year 2000, and it was postmarked England. And I thought to myself, wait a minute. When you're in my line of work, you think these thoughts. Someone out there is wanting to purify the earth of me in the name of God. But I looked at it again and I thought, no, this is something else. This is something else. So I carefully opened up the envelope and I discovered there was a typed letter and some other papers inside. And I want to read part of the letter for you today. It said this: "It grieves me when any institution uses its power to ban or censor works of art or literature, and we've dedicated ourselves to the preservation of that which would otherwise be destroyed in the name of morality or taste or political views or religious beliefs." This is vaguely reminiscent of those spam emails that we get. This is right before they ask us for our personal banking account information. The letter continues on. It says, "Now, however, it's come to our attention that these artifacts from over a century ago are once again in danger and that we are no longer able to keep them safe. As the tree spreads its seeds as far as it can in the hopes that one will fall on fertile ground, we're sending these precious parcels far and wide in the hopes that at least some will be preserved for future generations." Now, there were some older looking pieces of paper in the envelope. Here's two of the four: random pages from various acts of a play called The King in Yellow. An earnest exchange between these characters. "His tattered form haunts my dreams," she says. "I walk my halls, and at all times some small part seeks him out." It's all very lofty and mysterious. And the letter itself ended with these words: "Please keep this safe. You will hold in your hands a piece of history, and it will be your task to show it to the future. You have our thanks." And the letter is not signed. Now, I'm thinking what many of you people are thinking. I'm thinking, what is this? What have I received in my mailbox? I showed it to Natalie. I stared at the pages. I agonized over this for hours. I was just puzzled and perplexed. The post-date from 2000. It's from England. It's unsigned. What is this thing? Hours passed. No idea. It was just driving me nuts. And then it occurred to me. Someone I know and someone who knows me is behind this. And then I realized I know who is behind this. Which brings me to the second part of my story. I met my best friend, Corey, back in 1984 in high school. He was a junior, I was a sophomore at Eastwood Baptist High School. And we are two people who met and just hit it off. You ever meet those people in your lives where you just connect? Happens especially, I think, in high school. You find one person and you just jive with them. And we like the same stuff. We both love to write. We both love to read. We both love, you know, these classic 80s and 90s horror films like From Beyond and Reanimator. We loved Bloom County and Calvin and Hobbes. We loved playing video games, which in the late 80s and early 90s had their own special charm. Anybody remember the classic Commodore 64 game Archon? Oh, yeah. This was video gaming, I'm telling you. By the way, I was taken to task by a religious parent for playing this. I had it on the Commodore 64, and because the game has mages and sorcerers in it, I had brought demons and demon activity, and I'd opened a portal to the dark spirits, and I'd been taken to task and chastised for that. I used to drive a car, looks a lot like this one. This is not the actual vehicle. I used to drive this little VW Rabbit. My best friend, Corey, 6'7". We'd cram his ass in the passenger seat of this car. We'd go out and do all the stuff that friends do. We were pals for a lot of years. Corey was always welcome in my home. My folks loved Corey. He was a member of the family. He was always welcome. Until I got a letter from Corey. This was after he'd moved to Dallas the year's 1996. I share this story with his permission and with his blessing, in case you're curious. There's a three-page letter, typed letter. I couldn't tell you what was in the damn thing. Except for three words on page two. I will never forget. Those words were these. I am gay. Now, this is a secret that he had kept really, really well. I had no clue. Hell, I'd stood on the platform at his marriage to a woman years and years ago. Marriage didn't work out, and I figured, well, that's life. Marriage is tough. So many of them don't work out. I didn't read anything else into it. I had no idea what internal struggles he must have been going through at the time. I just figured, hey, whatever. Marriage is hard. Many of them don't work out, right? Now, I was heavily immersed in Christianity, and what I'd been taught was biblical marriage, one man, one woman. And the models of human sexuality, intimacy, relationships, and attraction had mostly only dealt with the plumbing. This is normally how Christians deal with sex, isn't it? And I was this guy. God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. I'm so embarrassed to admit to you, I was this guy. I would speak about these complex issues in bumper stickers. My Bible declared Corey had disqualified himself from an eternity in heaven with me. I harbored all kinds of paranoid scenarios in my mind. You know, about AIDS, which this was at the height of when AIDS was the gay disease. We were again speaking in ignorance. He's going to get AIDS. He's gay. That kind of stuff. I worried about his immortal soul. I worried about him on every level. I was repulsed by the idea of being attracted to or intimate with a man. I didn't get that at all. I didn't relate to that. That can't be right, right? I don't relate to it. It can't be right. Go figure. Who is this person? What happened to my best friend? What in the world am I supposed to do with all this information? So a few days passed, and I stewed on it, and I finally typed out a big, long, I'm sure a very sanctimonious letter that said something to the tune of, you know, I love you with the love of the Lord. Ugh. I am deeply concerned, but I'm here, blah, 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 blah. And I sent the letter out, and I didn't hear from him again, and he didn't hear from me. Weeks passed, months passed, well over a year passed. We absolutely cut ties. We didn't write, we didn't call, we didn't see each other. Two best friends disconnected immediately from that point. I told my mom and dad, hugely fundamentalist religious Christian parents, mom and dad, Corey is gay. And of course, their response was what you might expect. It's evil. Don't touch it. Right? They came from the pray your gay away sort of school of thought. Homosexuality is a condition. Right? It's a condition. A disease of the soul, a perversion of God's master plan. That's what being gay is. Above all, it's a choice. Those who drifted outside the biblically approved hetero model of sexuality, well, they had made a choice to live a lifestyle. Pray for Corey, Seth. We'll pray for him. We'll pray for him with the love of Jesus. That kind of condescending platitude makes me crazy, and it makes me crazier to know that I used to be guilty of doing it myself. Pray for Corey, but more importantly, I hope you're not spending any time with Corey. Like he was going to infect me with gay. In other words, regarding our decade-long friendship, I should nuke it from orbit. It's the only way to be sure. And if you know what this pop culture reference is from, kudos to you. Right? He's doing things with men. What's next, animals? This is always the argument I hear. What's next, animals? Dogs and cats? What's this world coming to? Now, my parents... No, they're not really my parents. They cultivated an extremely Puritan home environment. If you read Deconverted, you already know all of this. So I just saw this picture on the internet. I thought it was funny. This is a little bit like how my family treated sex, even marital sex, with a divider between the husband and the wife, you know. What little we learned about sex was filtered through this Puritan worldview, men and women only if you're married. Anything else is either a perversion and or adultery. And most of this was implied more than it was actually taught, because sex was an almost taboo subject in our home. I wrote in my book, Deconverted, even though my parents would occasionally mention the sanctity of sex as part of a God-ordained marital union, sexuality was treated like unwelcome but unavoidable baggage that righteous people were charged to clumsily carry. My sisters were taught this verse out of Genesis chapter 3. Childbirth is going to suck for you because of the curse given to women through Eve, right? Eve succumbed to temptation, therefore all women, all female descendants of Eve, are cursed. And the attraction to and desire for your husband is tied to that curse. Right? I will make your pains in childbirth very severe. With painful labor you will give birth to children. Your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. This is all part of the curse that's handed down. And this was taught to my sisters. This sets into motion a really schizophrenic view of sexuality, especially in regard to women. It's beautiful, but it's part of the curse. You're equals, but you submit. He honors you. He rules over you. Sexual desire is good, but it's kind of bad. It's natural. It's lust. It's sinful. In other words, it's like this. Sex is a naughty, dirty, lustful, icky, nasty thing, and you should only do it with the person you'll be married to for the rest of your life. Like, my parents never had the sex talk with us. Ever. Thank goodness for my older brother being available to answer some basic questions, and thank goodness for poorly scrambled late-night cable television. I had not the tools, my friends, to process this notion that attraction, connection, love, and marriage might exist out of my own limited perception. My worldview was locked on to just a few cherry-picked verses from the Christian Bible, otherwise known as the Goat Herder's Guide to the Universe. This supposed rule book for living had all kinds of crazy ideas about tons of stuff. The same book that declared Corey, my best friend, worthy of execution was the same book, and you know this, that also forbade eating fat, showing up before God with an unauthorized fire. You can't have messy hair. You can't touch rabbits? What's that about? You can't attend church within 30 days of giving birth to a boy child, double that length if it's a female child, because you're doubly icky. Sex while menstruating forbidden. You can't mix your fabrics, a cotton polyester blend, you're totally screwed. You can't trim your beard, tattoos. Or how many people have seen tattoos on Christian pastors and just laughed their ass off? It's awesome. Working on a Saturday, death sentence in the Old Testament. You're working on the Sabbath. The guy who was picking up twigs was summarily executed at God's command. Oh, that stuff's all for yesterday. It was a different time. Well, what about the gay verses are timeless. The gay verses, no. Those are timeless. Those are absolute. They're more relevant today than they've ever been. Have you seen this phenomenon? You know what? Let's talk about it over seafood. Look, I'll buy you some shrimp or lobster. Seafood's an abomination according to the Old Testament. Cherry picking is what they're doing based on their own subjective preferences. It's like that Susan B. Anthony quote that says, I distrust those people who know so well what God wants them to do because I notice it always coincides with their own desires. I had this revival preacher used to come to a church in Catoosa, Oklahoma. And yes, Catoosa was exactly like it sounds. The only thing missing was the banjo. Ding, 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 ding. You know, we used to have this guy come out once a year. And he would wail on rock music, including Christian rock music. And but at the time, I was a Christian rock guy, Petra, Res Band, all that stuff. And he would come out and talk about how it's all infected with evil and it's all the devil's work, blah, 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 blah. And he would just wail about the insanity of it all. And it's the end. And you know what his favorite kind of music was? Country. Love them and leave them. Dirty country was just fine. You want to know why? Because that's the music that he personally preferred. And that's no coincidence. What I struggled with quietly back in 1996 was that Corey's story was really messing with my categories. Gay was a label. Corey was a flesh and blood human being. Gays were angry and rebellious and always acting out in some way. Corey was happy and responsible. Gays were trying to take over polite society and infect the world. Corey just wanted to live and be happy. He was totally messing with my categories. It'd be long years before I'd start to learn that non-heterosexuality was common, common in the non-human animal. Was the mallard duck also in rebellion against God? Mallards express same-sex attraction. What about giraffes? Adam and Steve, for another. Male giraffes often ignoring the females to express attraction to other males. They never taught about this stuff in our biology class in Christian school, largely because our biology classes were taught by apologists. What about the bottlenose dolphins? Is Satan whispering in their ears? In fact, do bottlenose dolphins have ears? That's a whole other speech. The bonobo and other apes. I just thought this needed a caption. I don't know why. Fully bisexual species. The Darner dragonfly. Hundreds of other examples out there. Why was something so unnatural, so common in nature? When someone says it's not natural, they're just not paying attention. I hadn't gotten to those discussions in my own life yet. My focus at the time was on the friend I'd lost, and it was a big loss. It was over a year later I finally broke the silence. I realized our friendship hadn't come to a halt because Corey was gay. That's not why our friendship came to a halt. Our friendship came to a halt because I was a bigot. I had almost no real education or perspective. I'd been trained, brainwashed really, by my family's cherry-picked Bible teachings based on the ignorance of primitive cultures to separate, to indict, to label, to judge, to condemn. The church talks a really good game about love, but it has mastered the art of judgment. Condemnation, accusation, damnation, reproach, disapproval, division. This was not my heart. It wasn't how I felt. I stopped finally fretting about Corey the gay, and I started refocusing my eyes on Corey the person, Corey the friend. My life was simply better when he was a part of it, and that's what I told him. You're good, man. I'm good. Live and be happy, and let's keep in touch. Call me when you're in town. Let's get together. Let's have dinner. Let's reconnect. Let's be friends. You know, it's interesting. I'm from Oklahoma. I don't know how. Do you guys have fundamentalists in Riverside? I'm taking that to be a yes. How often have we had to endure the warnings about America's moral decay? We're not just going to hell. We're going there in a handbasket. Things are worse than they've ever been. Everywhere you look, God's under attack. The moral fabric of this great nation's under... This is how we speak in Oklahoma, by the way. It's under attack, damn it. We are so under attack. We're so afflicted. We're so persecuted. We are so oppressed. Ultimately, I came to the realization that those who are complaining about how they're not allowed to talk about Jesus were always talking about what? Jesus. And they enjoyed a crazy amount of religious privilege. Time off of work for religious holidays. They get to display nativities or whatever in their property. Religious TV and radio is freaking everywhere. There's over 300,000 churches in the United States. Countless stores selling religious stuff. Worshiping freely any day, any time, any way they want. You can put a bumper sticker on your car. You can wear crosses around your neck. There's a real good chance your elected official has your religious belief. Christian schools and Christian homeschools, perfectly protected by the Constitution. You can evangelize, you can take mission trips, you can make converts. Oaths are sworn in court on the Bible. There's a Bible in most hotel rooms. Try that with any other religion or Dawkins the God delusion. No, I don't think so, but the Bible is perfectly fine. Plus the freedom to write and produce Christian-themed material. The freedom to be Christian and to celebrate and worship Jesus is everywhere. It's the month of September. You and I are already bracing ourselves. We're bracing ourselves for the war on Christmas. It's coming. It's coming. Right? Fox News fuels this flame every freaking year. I cannot believe it. I love this quote by John Stewart. The caption's really small. Let me just try to read it to you here. I pray one day we may live in an America where Christians can worship freely in broad daylight, openly wearing the symbols of their religion, perhaps around their necks. And maybe, dare I dream it, maybe one day there can be an openly Christian president, or perhaps 43 of them consecutively. On April Fool's Day of this year, the film God's Not Dead 2 was released. Did anyone submit themselves to this horror? I'm very sorry for your loss. This film tells with a straight face the story of a school teacher who believes in Jesus and is literally taken to court for her faith. The film was produced freely, released freely, and is racking up tens and tens of millions of dollars freely while selling the bullshit story that Christianity cannot be expressed freely in the United States. The manufactured martyrs enjoy this. They enjoy acting like they're persecuted. In fact, they are commanded to be persecuted for Jesus' sake in the New Testament. 2 Timothy tells them, yes, and all that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. It's a requirement for the believer to take up your cross. If you're not being persecuted for your faith, if you're not under attack, if things are too comfortable, you must be doing it wrong. You must be more like Jesus, which requires you to be martyred or persecuted for your faith. And when it doesn't really exist, the persecution's not there, what do? You make it up out of whole cloth. Here's a great example. This guy's name is Pastor Glenn Barrett. You've met. Pastor Glenn Barrett is the pastor of Audacious Church, Big Mega Church. And so he tells this story that was released on God TV on video, this little clip before it was pulled, where he told his adoring congregation about the time that he, as a believer, was invited by Cambridge, by the Atheistic Society. Does that name seem a little odd to you guys for a group at Cambridge? Doesn't ring true. The Atheistic Society invited him to participate against a believer in a debate called God Does Not Exist. I believe that's what it was. The debate topic didn't ring true either. That doesn't sound like a debate topic that you and I have seen. So according to his story, he goes to Cambridge and he takes the stage in front of 800 to 1,000 booing and hissing atheists. Now, 800 atheists in the audience, keeping in mind the American Atheist National Convention usually attracts about 1,000 people nationwide. Those numbers don't really add up either. He takes the stage, essentially he does the argument from ignorance or the God of the gaps. What's the length of the stuff? We don't know. Could my God exist in that space? Therefore, my God exists. I hope you come to know Jesus. And he tells the story to his adoring Audacious Church congregation, and they applaud him. They lap it up. He's been persecuted in Jesus' name. Those nasty, icky atheists were booing him and hissing him as he took the stage. How many people here have either been to or watched online a debate between an atheist and a religious person? Let me see a show of hands. Okay, quite a few of you. I've seen quite a few myself. Have any of you ever seen an apologist or a God believer like William Lane Craig debating Lawrence Krauss, or John Lennox debating Richard Dawkins, or when Hitch debated Shmuley Botiak? Have you seen any debate anywhere where when the religious person took the podium, you heard boo, hiss, sis from the audience? Anybody heard that? Doesn't ring true. I mean, when he described the atheist in his story, the only thing was a visual description, something like this. Angus Scrimm from the classic horror film Phantasm is kind of what I'd pictured in my mind. But one of my listeners did some homework, and they followed up with Cambridge, the Cambridge University Atheist and Agnostic Society. And they said, hey, I'm curious about this story, man. I want to find out about this debate. Is there video? Can we get some details? It'd be great to find out more. Cambridge responded, and they said this, and I quote, no, we did not invite him, and this event did not happen. We've never heard of him. Now, Pastor Barrett still hasn't explained any of this. It's possible that he simply manufactured his martyrdom. He manufactured the persecution, and he told that story to a closed system of adoring believers who have, let's face it, not been brought up in a culture that encourages fact-checking. It fit their narrative. It fit their persecution complex. It made them feel powerful that he won the debate, and they cheered this man. It's like that Betty Bowers meme that shows the pie chart with the majority of Christians screaming, help, we're being oppressed, we're being oppressed. How do you sell this in a culture where you have we have Jewish, non-religious, and other unsaved trash at the bottom. I just thought it was funny. How do you sell this narrative in a place where you have almost total freedom, pretty much total freedom to worship Jesus? And this, I think, is where we discover what Christians are totally freaked about. This is really the thing that they're upset about. They're not upset because they can't speak and be heard. They're upset that those who disagree with them can speak and be heard as well. Those different than them are claiming the same freedoms for different beliefs and expressions. And they hit the ceiling. As Alex Jewell said in a video we conducted in Dallas, Texas earlier this year, he said, when you're in a position of privilege, equality feels like oppression. When you're a Christian who's used to having pretty much a monopoly on the conversation, and you're informed that religious liberty must apply to others, the Muslim, the Hindu, the Satanist, you guys been watching that crazy shit going on in Florida at the city council meetings? Wow. It's wild down there. Crazy. The atheist, it applies to the atheist? That's going to be tough to swallow. The heterosexual, the homosexual, the transgender, the people who make you personally uncomfortable and who disagree with you and challenge you. You have to share the spotlight with them. You just cry, ugh. They're icky. They don't walk like me. They don't talk like me. And I'm used to being around people who do. Every time I look up, I see affirmation because people do it my way. My cocoon's been accosted. I don't have a monopoly on the narrative anymore. I have to abide challenge and criticism. It's terrible. Oh, the humanity. It's like that Emerson quote that says, "Let me never fall into the vulgar mistake of dreaming I'm persecuted whenever I am contradicted." Are you and I persecuting religious people? No. We're holding up a hand and saying, actually, that's factually wrong. And they can't stand it. It's a convenient mechanism, then, for insulating someone. A bigotry, a bad idea, a religion, from criticism. When you're legitimately challenged or just questioned, you just declare you're persecuted and make sure you claim as your own the voice of God. We see a whole bunch of this with Islam, declaring the critics of Islam and Islamic teaching, what, racist and Islamophobic, as if Islam is a race or a skin color. Islam is an idea. Fundamentalist Christians and those in some other faiths declaring for so long women were supposed to shut up and submit, right? Woman, be silent. Go home, tell your husband, let him come and speak on your behalf. I do not permit a woman to speak, to teach, or have authority over a man. When those men were disagreed with, what did they do? They claimed that men were being persecuted. In the civil rights battles of the South and elsewhere, white students directed by law to share their school classrooms with non-white students. And what happened? Many of the whites invoked the name of God and declared the white race was being persecuted, was under attack. I like this photograph I saw on the internet with the interracial couple that said, "Our marriage was once illegal too." This was in relation to the transgender headlines we've seen so much. Of course, Target dominating those headlines back in the spring with their gender-neutral or transgender-friendly bathrooms. They were challenged. They had people protesting inside the stores. And Target pretty much said, "We don't give a shit. We're going to do it our way." It was awesome. Anybody here hear the radio show and see the interview I did with Trey Crowder? If you don't know who Trey is, he's a comedian based in Tennessee who's got a sort of an alter ego that he puts online called the Liberal Redneck. And he takes on, he's a progressive, but he takes on bigotry and other issues with this redneck persona. If you have just a second, let me play just a clip that he produced months ago in regard to the transgender controversy.
What's up, y'all? Liberal Redneck here. We gonna do it again. Fired up, son. I've been seeing all these Facebook posts about transgender bathrooms, and every one of them comes down to the same shit. Well, hell, what's to stop some pervert from wrapping a skirt around his wiener and going in the ladies' room with my baby girl? I ain't having that. We gotta watch out for the kids, the kids, the kids. Meanwhile, these are the same motherfuckers that put Mountain Dew in sippy cups and beat a six-year-old with a wire hanger for standing in front of the TV during Dr. Oz. Y'all are so full of shit. What do you think is gonna happen? You do know that transgender people have existed forever, right? What bathrooms you think they've been using? And how many times you ever hear about what you're worried about happening, happening? Hardly not, never. Because even people that are child molesters are not going to prey on a kid in broad daylight, in public, especially not with their mouth-breathing troglodyte daddy 12 feet outside the door just dying to punch something different. It don't make no sense. And what about little boys? The vast majority of people that prey on little boys are adult males. This law don't affect them one way or the other. So unless you're also suggesting that we have separate bathrooms for Catholic priests, I think you need to cut the shit. Quit being a pussy and say what you mean. You're freaked out. The thought of a man wanting to be a woman disgusts you. Because like most things that disgust you, you lack the capacity to understand it. You know, homos, algebra, shit like that. And y'all ain't gonna change. I realize that now. But that's okay. Because the rest of us are trying to ensure that the next generation, you know, your kids, grow up in a world that's a little more open-minded. And that's happening whether you like it or not. Bye.
Well, Trey's a gem. He is so much fun. I saw this online. I just inserted it into the presentation because I thought it was an interesting take on the opposition's. The text is small. Let me just read it real fast to you. 10 reasons to oppose marriage equality. Number one, being gay is not natural. Real Americans always reject unnatural things like eyeglasses, polyester, and air conditioning. Gay marriage will encourage people to be gay in the same way that hanging around tall people will make you tall. Legalizing gay marriage will open the door to all kinds of crazy behavior. People may even wish to marry their pets because a dog has legal standing and can sign a marriage contract. Straight marriage has been around a long time and hasn't changed at all, like many of the principles on which this great country was founded. Women are still property, blacks still can't marry whites, and divorce is still illegal. 5, straight marriage will be less meaningful if gay marriage were allowed. The sanctity of marriages like Britney Spears would be destroyed. Dates the meme just a little bit, I guess. The only valid marriages are those which produce children. Gay couples, infertile couples, and old people shouldn't be allowed to marry because our orphanages aren't full yet and the world needs more children. Number 7, obviously gay parents will raise gay children since straight parents only raise straight children. Number 8, gay marriage is not supported by religion. In a theocracy like ours, the values of one religion are imposed on the entire country. That's why we have only one religion in America. Children can never succeed without both a male and female role model at home. That's why we as a society expressly forbid single parents to raise children. And number 10, gay marriage will change the foundation of society. We could never adapt to new social norms. Just like we haven't adapted to cars, the service sector economy, and longer lifespans. I just thought that was an interesting meme. Now, if you had brought the transgender argument to me when I was a believer, when I was a devout Christian, when I still believed in Jesus and God and heaven and hell and all, if you'd have brought transgender to me, I would have been this guy. My head would have popped off. I would have had no clue what to do with it. I wouldn't have thought to examine the science of human sexuality beyond the religious indoctrination, which defined my upbringing. How liberating it is today to be able to explore this stuff without being handcuffed to bad ideas, without fear, to understand how genetics appears to play into it, gender identity formed at least partially in our DNA, in our genetic makeup, and other environmental factors that speak to human sexuality. There was a Science Daily article from last year that spoke to the increasing evidence that gender identity is rooted in our very biology. How exciting, how liberating it is to be able to examine and explore issues like this without being chained to obsolete ideas and to give ourselves permission to allow for a world where people who are different than us have value, they have a voice, and they have the right to live and pursue happiness on their own terms. Now, some people, especially in my neck of the woods, say, we know it's just political correctness is what that is. All this political correctness is going to be the end of us. I'm politically incorrect and proud of it. Well, you know, it's politically incorrect to call my best friend any number of anti-gay slurs. I use them loud and proud. People use these terms, apparently not realizing the freedom of expression might just reveal their true character. Because admitting you're an asshole is the first step, after all. To be an advocate for somebody else's basic rights doesn't make you a shill or a coward or a poster child for political correctness. It's about ideas. We discard bad ideas, obsolete ideas, and we embrace better ideas. And I've come to consider myself an advocate for Corey, for gay marriage, the right of consenting adults to bond themselves in matrimony and pursue happiness together and receive the benefits of marriage, the same benefits that I get to enjoy with Natalie. Now, this is where some of my religious friends get a little weird. They look at me with a raised eyebrow and they say, oh, you support gay rights, huh? You got something you want to tell me? Are you gay? This one baffles me. It doesn't really baffle me. I see it for what it is. It's a tremendous amount of sexual insecurity on their part, I think. It's like asking if my support of equal rights for non-whites makes me black. It makes no sense. Of course, different races and colors and cultures can be advocates for each other. People who are different can be advocates for each other. And I can stand right beside Corey to help carve out a better world for all of us. As this poster says so well, I'm not gay, but I am very supportive. Since I'm talking again about Corey, let me come full circle and mention the envelope again that came to my door in March of this year. I actually got several packages. Out of the blue, weeks apart. Turns out there is a real King in Yellow, a collection of fictional stories by an American writer named Robert Chambers. And there are these mystery packages. They were part of my Christmas present. Now, they arrived months after Christmas, so I didn't make any connection. This was months and months after the December 25th holiday. Corey knows I love a good yarn, a good mystery, a good story. He knows I like something original, and so he worked through a company called the Mysterious Package Company. Now, I contacted the Mysterious Package Company, and I made sure that it was okay that I share the story, since they're in the secrets business. Even their homepage, their website's very enigmatic. You can't really see what it is or what it's about. But you choose someone in your life that you would like to sort of ambush. You choose someone in your life that you would like to drive a little bit mad in the best possible way. And you sign them up for a mystery package. And months later, they just start receiving weird shit in the mail. Your name isn't on it. There's no other clue. They just start receiving it. And it becomes this thing where you are watching with amusement and great joy from afar while your friend is going batshit crazy trying to figure out what is in my mailbox. Check this out. This was the last package I got. It was a box that was nailed shut. I had to open it with a crowbar. And inside was this sort of Death Eater looking statue, very cryptic looking, you know, very Lord of the Rings looking. And it's on display in my office. And of course, when I realized who had sent this, who was behind this, I called him up and we had one of the best laughs we have had in the 30 years we've known each other. This is one of the most awesome things ever. How did you come up with this? And he's laughing and we're talking about how he set it up. And I'm reading him the letters that I'd gotten in the mail and I'm taking phone photographs of the stat. And I'm like, shit, you should see what I got. This is crazy. This is the best gift ever. We were having a moment. We were having this great memory, an experience that wouldn't have existed had I cut him off back in 1996 because I was too bigoted to see Corey the friend. Because I was too chained to obsolete ideas, because I was more in love with my dogma than I was with someone who'd been such a good person in my life. How much would I have missed? How much would I have missed if I hadn't written that other letter that said, hey, man, you're good. I'm good. It's all good. You know, I've missed you. Let's hang out. If we hadn't had the decades since then to be able to be best friends, which we remain today. I produced a video called Something Beautiful. It is available on YouTube if you'd like to watch it after this, but I'm going to show it for you tonight. It's funny, I had this thing's been going on kind of under the surface for me. This whole idea of religiously motivated bigotry, just bigotry in general, just rejecting people for differences, the double standards, the hypocrisy. And I'd written the script out, but when I wrote it out, I'm a voiceover guy, so normally I voice my own stuff, but I didn't hear my own voice in it. I heard somebody else's. It was just in my head. I thought, wouldn't it be great if this guy would do this? And I contacted my buddy, maybe you've heard of Nathan Phelps, the son of Fred Phelps, the founder of Westboro Baptist Church. Nathan escaped at midnight on his 18th birthday, burst through the door, and he never came back. And he has been a human rights advocate in his own life for literally decades. And he's a dear friend. I said, look, Nate, I got this idea for a project. Would you narrate this sucker for me? And he read the script and he's like, I'm in. And we put this together. I'd like to finish my official presentation with you, this particular video. It runs about 4 minutes. It's called Something Beautiful. I hope you enjoy.
Why are we so quick to see the ugly when we stand before the beautiful? Why have we declared that those who are different than us are separate from us? Why do we stand before the light only to turn and face the darkness. Far back to the earliest moments of human memory, we've broken ourselves into small tribes of inclusion, only so that we could treat others with exclusion. We told ourselves that we were right, that we were superior, and that God was on our side. So many sacred scriptures, rites, edicts, and doctrines are bathed in the blood of tribes, each one warring against the other, each one declaring divine right, each prepared to take their divisions, their bigotry, their fear, and their hatred to the grave. And tragically, many do so. Thousands and thousands of groups, religions, cultures, races, and nations, each declaring that it's us versus them, each building their temples, monuments, and messages upon the human tragedy of ignorance, division, and hate. It's such a waste to look at all others and hope to only see ourselves, to stand upon the claims of primitive times and primitive minds, declaring that times and minds should never change, and holding in contempt the very people we should be holding in our arms. Ignorance, fear, hatred, we teach it to our children. They teach it to their children, who teach it to their children. We cloak it in the shroud of righteousness. We speak it in the name of justice, and we claim it in the name of God. And we could be so much better. I have witnessed the power of hatred, but I discovered a much grander and better world beyond. I see your face, and it is beautiful. I hear your voice, and it is beautiful. I know that you are different than me, and it is beautiful. And I'm proud to stand beside you like a brother. I am your brother. We are links in the human chain, alive at this moment for a brief, priceless chance to breathe the air, to feel the sun upon our faces, to speak the very best words for the very best reasons, to pursue the best ideas and achieve the greatest dreams, to unite instead of divide, to heal instead of harm, and to share together the preciousness of life. Wouldn't it be something if those were the things we taught to our children? To look at someone who is different, wonderfully different, and see something beautiful.
Thank you all very, very much.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.